here we are again, and another episode is going to happen right here, right now, on the D-Lo. Anyways, how is everybody? I have a special guest, and I've always messed up her name, and I think a lot of other people mess up her name, but it goes by Danielle.
Yes.
How do you spell that, Danielle?
D-A-W-N-Y-E-L.
And how did you get that name?
So my dad tells the story that they were going to name me Danielle, and that he had a dream that my uncle dropped me, and so he changed it to Don and Yell, but only one L. But I was born in the 70s, so I don't know if it was a dream or maybe something else.
Oh, yes. There could have been some hallucinogens.
Maybe not.
Well, that's a great story. See, people need to know why your name. Now, do you run into many other Danielles?
No, not at all. Yeah. Like, the closest I've ever kind of seen out there, besides if you Google the name, is Danielle Marshall, who is a dude who plays basketball.
Okay.
But that's about the closest.
And then Smink, where did that come from?
That came from my husband.
Came from your husband.
Yeah, my maiden name was Price.
Oh.
Much easier.
Much easier. Well, congratulations. Welcome to the podcast. I'm excited to have you. We, you know, for full transparency for people that listen, we are very close friends to the effect that we would consider ourselves like work spouses.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we met under some interesting terms for sure. Those we can maybe get into later. But more importantly, I want to talk about you, and I want people to get to know you a little bit and understand a little bit about your past or where you came from. Because people that, you know, are listening, they like to hear people's stories, and they like to understand how the people's story relates to business and where they've come and how they've come to do what they're doing now. So I understand that you were an elementary school teacher, correct?
I was, sixth grade.
Sixth grade. How long did you do that?
I did that for 3 years.
And then just wanted to pull your hair out, or?
I loved the kids. I did not like the parents all that much.
Yeah.
Then I didn't like the admin side of it either. I'm kind of like you, where we want to reinvent things, and we don't like the word no.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard the word no a lot, and I didn't think it was to the benefit of the children. And so that was frustrating for me. But I also, I've always been an entrepreneur, so my salary was capped no matter what I did.
Yeah.
I just really wanted something that I could always build and grow.
So talk about your entrepreneur spirit. I mean, besides, you know, Canyonlands, which you put together and we'll talk about in detail, what other entrepreneurial spirit type of things have you been into?
I think it started when I was like a little kid.
Yeah.
Whatever I could do to, you know, try and make money, I was going to do. So I can't believe my parents actually let me do half the stuff I did. And from a risk management side that I'm at now, would scare the living daylights out of me as a parent. But my dad, he built me up a whole gymnasium thing in the backyard with a beam. And so I would do gym clinics with kids.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, do gymnastics in the back of my, backyard.
Oh, make charge. Them pay to come do it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah. And then I found out I was really good at getting cleaning jobs, but I hate cleaning. So I would go get the jobs and then sub it out to my sister and my friends and stuff and have them do the jobs. So I did that from a young age.
So this shit's always been in your blood.
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah. I think it's interesting because my dad, he always thought I was going to do something huge, right?
Right.
So when I became a teacher, he was I could see he was disappointed in me, that I was going to be a teacher because I was supposed to be something more. And then when I went independent, he was he's now my daughter's doing what she's supposed to be doing.
And why do you think you became a teacher?
It's a good mom, job.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
I got pregnant my senior year of college and thought that I was doing the right thing. And I love teaching. Everything that we do, I mean, we teach our clients every day, right? And so we're educating. So I technically use my degree every single day in, educating others. I mean, if you're doing any type of coaching or even sales, if you don't have an aspect of an educational side to it, then you're not really doing your job.
Right. 1000%. So you go, you do all that, and then all of a sudden, years later, you end up getting into an industry that is predominantly, you know, male dominant, like most of these industries out here. Was there ever a detraction because of that, or was this just something where you're like, you know, I'm going to get into this and take the bull by the horns?
I don't think it was a detraction. I knew the obstacles that I would have because they're just. You're right. It was we were known as male Pell and Stell mm-hmm. as an industry, which is
totally
yeah. But also, when you walk in a room, you're going to be noticed as a female, especially if you're the only female in the room. And even though I have a difficult name, I'm going to be remembered.
Yeah.
And so I always looked at it as an advantage. Where are the strategies that I can use and the advantages that I can use to, you know, make myself more successful? So if you have that kind of mindset when you're going into it, instead of a victim mindset,
right.
going like, well, there's not as many of us. Sometimes, I mean, even still today, I'll go to an appointment with one of my commercial team members that's a male, and the owner will talk to him instead of me. And so you kind of know sometimes that's going to happen. But I love it. I love working in our industry.
Yeah, but let's talk about that meeting. Like, how does that make you feel when, you know, some guy across the table that is, you know, blatantly not even looking at you or not even, like, feeling your input per se, and you're the one that has all the information and the knowledge? I mean, what is it? Like, how do you play that situation, in other words, without coming across maybe too harsh, but also making your point that, hey, you know, I'm here.
Yeah, so I always look at it as like, okay, so this is the challenge that I have in front of me.
Yeah.
And I don't look at it as a negative thing, but how I look at it is that the challenge for me is that I'm going to prove to them what a badass I am.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that I know what I'm doing, and by the end of the meeting, they're going to be super confident and know that I'm the go-to person. And so I always look at it, if you're being underestimated, it is actually an opportunity to impress them instead of taking it as an insult.
Yeah, and if they're not, then it's really their problem at the end of the day. Because don't you think a lot of that stuff, I mean, maybe our generation, you know, you and me being in our 40s, maybe our generation might be seeing the last of that. Because I know our generation from people coming to sell us, you know, in per se, we're not acting that way. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, most of us. I just think that, you know, society might have grown up a little bit to, you know, pay respect to everybody as equals.
Oh, yeah. I've seen such a difference in the last 10 years. It's been unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, the first 10 years of selling, especially, like, I decided I really wanted to focus on commercial,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's even less as far as female, you know, producers and agency owners that are doing primarily commercial. So that was something that I'm excited to see that it's changed.
Yeah.
And that I'm hoping that some of the things that we've done, you know, our generation will help the generation after us.
I think they will.
And we're starting to see it for sure.
Yeah. Is your agency, Canyonlands, you know, on that side of producing business, is that predominantly women run?
Well, it's Heather and I
running
on that
side.
So, I mean, it's definitely predominantly women. But it's a different, like, my structure is just different, too.
It's not,
I have a lot of referring partners, so I am the producer. But it's no different than yours now.
Yeah.
You are the producer.
I am the producer, but my agency is women run.
Yeah.
Because everybody's a woman, which is great because they're all smarter than me and, you know, more put together. I'm a maniac, as everybody knows. So the Canyonlands, talk about how all that came to fruition, you know, the beginning of that story. I know that I know it, but for people listening, and how where you're at now and where that's developed to.
Canyonlands started with Ken Walters, and we were a part of Country Companies, and it was a captive carrier. It still is a captive carrier. It's just called Country Financial
mm-hmm.
now. And they really wanted to, you know, push financial services. Well, a number of us were very, very happy doing property and casualty. And so he started the group. And then in 2004, I decided that I really wanted to do more commercial. And I thought it was time for me to go independent. So I joined with him. it's funny, I just saw him a couple months ago, and I told him, I'm like, I can't believe what I said to you the first time that we met for me. And I had known him, but first time I had met to actually join the group. And I had told him that in 2 years, I'm going to be bigger than you. I'm going to have my own thing, my own group. And I had such an ego into this conversation. And it was really interesting because he said to me when I met with him last, you know, the last couple months ago, he's like, I actually thought that was just so inspiring because I never heard another female that actually spoke like that.
And performed.
Yeah, and then performed.
Right.
Yeah. And so he looked at it in a way that was very different than I did. And I was just like very determined. That was where that was coming from.
Yeah.
But now as I've gotten older, and I'm sure you have too, sometimes being really cocky is really not so awesome. So
well, ego can get in the way of many things. And I think perception and reality changes as we go into different seasons of life, which I've always talked about. Like, I'm way different than when I was 20, but I'm also the same person. You know, I just think that maybe the wine on the shelf has matured a little bit better, you know?
I'm going to steal that.
There you go. I just made that shit up.
Yeah, you did. That was brilliant. But so I came over and started the first large commercial appointment for the group. And then by 2008, I ended up buying out Ken as the group. And really, I was really focused on growing my agency. And then we'd add a couple of agencies a year that we felt were a good fit. And actually, you were a pivotal part of us going to the contract that we have now, where it was a flat fee.
Wow.
And that was like when, and we had talked about it before you came over with us as well, is that larger agencies were not attracted to a split of commissions.
Right.
It just didn't make sense. And as an agency that grew like super quickly in the beginning, I felt like I was getting like penalized for growing quickly.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to create something that didn't do that.
Okay, so people listen and don't know shit about insurance or understand any of this. You now have this, you have this agency. It's called Canyonlands. And now Canyonlands, it sells home, auto, commercial, anyways, all like personal property, PNC insurance, property casualty. But it also has this almost like, would you call it like a franchise element to it? So explain that, because this is phenomenal. This is what people need to hear.
Yeah, so the franchise side of it is, we have us at corporate, and we help bring in the vendors, so AKA carriers. But we also have partnerships with technology companies, and we bring those things to agencies.
Yeah.
So what has happened in our industry, and it's happened like all over in other industries too, there's a lot of mergers and acquisitions, and the big guys are getting bigger.
Right.
And the smaller guys, it's getting harder for them to compete, and the margins are smaller than they have been before. So what we bring is we bring a collective leverage as the franchisor to the franchisees, but don't take ownership in their agencies. So our key is keeping them independent.
That's huge. Mm-hmm. No ownership in other people's shit.
No.
Yeah.
But we work together as a team.
So. Yeah. No, it's great. And you're so involved in the industry per se. Like, I don't even know how you have time to sell anything, because you're on all these councils, which means that you have to go travel and you have to, you know, kiss the ring, for lack of a better term. And you also have to take the brunt of the, you know, of some of the losses and things that happened, not even necessarily on your behalf, but agencies that you've brought upon yourself. And then you also get to celebrate in the victories and, you know, go do certain things. So why be so involved? Do you really enjoy it?
I love it.
Yeah.
It means a lot to me that I get to be the voice of a lot of entrepreneurs. I spend a lot of my days talking to our agencies or talking to the carriers about pain points.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at the heart of it, I like to build stuff, but I also like to problem solve and think out of the box and not like, you know, think about it in a different aspect. Like, don't put a barrier on it. Just really think about like how we could do it different. And our industry needs that type of innovation.
Right.
And I know I can bring it. I do it within my own agency. I mean, we have, you know, meetings twice a week that all we're doing is thinking about how to do it differently.
Yeah, no, you do. You're definitely a you're definitely one of those places of work that, you know, we certainly look up to as well. And so when you look at all that and you talk about all that stuff, like, how do you find your time for family and, you know, like getting time away and doing all that? How do you make the most of that?
I believe that it isn't about work-life balance. That's a myth. I believe in time blocking, and I believe in time buckets. So what I do is I block out my time to make sure I am filling the buckets in my life. And that is me as an individual. If you don't give to yourself first, you're going to be depleted. And so your other buckets of family and community, and then the other bucket of your, you know, your work life, those are not going to be able to be filled if you aren't first.
Right.
And so I look at my time as how much time have I put into there? And you don't want any bucket overflowing, right? Mm-hmm. You put too much time into it. So there's trade-offs. Sometimes my work bucket's going to be fuller than maybe my family and community bucket, and then even my individual. But then I make sure I look at the whole year and look at it and not have maybe mom guilt, wife guilt, or even work guilt when you take vacations, or even like spouse, like especially spouse guilt, like when you like go and do something for yourself kind of thing. So I really try and look at that holistically of where I'm putting my time into those buckets and trying to make sure none of them basically has a gaping hole and that there's nothing in it.
No, that's really cool. So when you talk about buckets, what do you like, talk about some of your personal non-negotiable buckets, like every day, Danielle, got to do this, or my day goes, you know, or I get a little bit off track. Like, what are yours?
I need to plan before I start my week. So I do it Sunday or I do it Monday morning, depending on my family schedule. Mm-hmm. And so I have that time, so I know exactly what my calendar looks like for the week. I know if I've overscheduled myself or if I'm putting things in there I shouldn't be putting in there. So that's a non-negotiable, because when I don't do that, I just feel like I'm running around like a crazy person. Mm-hmm. So I definitely need to set my week, make sure I'm, you know, I'm hitting the objectives that I need to hit, and that I'm scheduling a schedule that supports those objectives as well.
Do you have a certain food you have to eat, or a certain exercise you got to do, or a certain meditation, or?
I have to have coffee.
You have to have coffee.
I have to have coffee.
Coffee's for closers.
Yes, exactly. Thus the shirt.
That's so funny. That's perfect. Now, you're very much about culture. Your whole company and, you know, the franchisees that come in and this and that, they learn a lot about CLI, you know, culture and what goes on. You do annual events that are absolutely amazing. This last event, you put together this Monopoly game that everybody got with, you know, pretty much branded to you and your company. I'm sure that was cheap, or probably paid for through a sponsor, which is brilliant. You have a whole person, Tabitha, does all the marketing. I mean, you really put good people in good places and do all that sort of stuff. So I know it's big. That's a dumb question. Tell me about what you want people to know about culture and the importance within what you do and how you feel it could help them.
I think it's most important in order to set culture is you have to set what the expectations are. Mm-hmm. But you also need to make sure you reiterate the vision.
Yeah.
You may think you say it once, and then everyone understands exactly where you're going. It's kind of like giving somebody a roadmap, like one time, and then taking it away and then saying, you know how to get there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And no GPS,
right.
You know, no phone to get you there. You have to continually make sure that your team understands, here's the expectations, here's the roadmap of where we're going, and keep it in front of them all the time. And keep it in front of yourself too, because how do you know you're off track if you don't make sure that you have that vision of where you're going in front of you all the time?
Yeah, and with some of the things that you do, how do you come up with these ideas as far as like fun stuff to do for, you know, your partners, for your employees, that sort of stuff?
My brain does not shut off, but luckily I also have a marketing person whose brain does not shut off.
Yeah.
We can say one word and get super excited about that one word because we know exactly where the other one is going.
Mm.
So it's a really, really like awesome but unique relationship that Tabitha and I have. Like when I said game on, then her brain went to Monopoly, and then my brain went over here, and then we just kept going and bouncing off of each other. And it's fun.
Yeah.
It's like this fun, like marketing mental ping pong game that we kind of go back and forth on, and no one understands what we're doing until they see it.
And then when they see it, it gives the company, it gives the event an identity, you know, because that's the thing. People will remember maybe that year based on that identity and that event. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah. And everything ties together for us, too. I think if you're doing marketing out there, is sometimes people do an event and it has like a different type of theme to it, but pull things from before.
Yeah.
Too. Like we have the road to 200. Our goal is to have 200 agencies. I feel if we're past that, then we cannot do what we do excellently for our agencies. So we don't want to get too big either, right?
How many agencies do we have now?
We have 80.
80.
Just about 80.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
So we try and add the right ones that will fit our culture, going back to culture. Are they a good fit? We do a vetting that's a little bit longer than probably most groups. And we want to make sure we get the right people.
Well, and you're personally involved with all of these groups along with your staff. And so, you know, I'm not the only work husband. I know there's a bazillion work husbands out there. Probably, you know, maybe of that 80, how many are male dominant agencies? 60 of them? I mean.
Oh, it's probably more than that.
More than that? 70 of them? Yeah.
And so we're trying.
So you got all these work husbands, you know, and.
You're the OG, though.
Oh, thanks. How does that work for you when people are calling you and they're, you know, just like, how do you do the best that you can for everybody that has demands on you?
I don't do it. I have excellent people who do it with me. So Heather and Woody and I split up the agencies to make sure we're in front of them. And so as you grow, one of the hardest things to do was for me to let go of the agencies.
I'm
personally invested in each and every one of them. And so that was probably like my hardest thing to do. But Heather's been with us since 2005.
Yeah.
Like she knows all the agencies. They know her. She's like amazing. And so you hand it off to amazing people.
What's the difference between being a school teacher and dealing with 80 children that you have below you?
I cannot physically control the agencies. Like the kids, I can't physically control them.
That's funny. Insurance, what does it mean to you? Where is it going in the future? And how do you keep it from being commoditized within the realms of you going out and presenting yourself as a human being with a product that they can find on any street corner?
I think it's our job right now. The industry is changing. We have a lot of pressures with inflation, and the claims experience has been horrible. There's a bunch of articles that just came out this third quarter about State Farm. This is like their most unprofitable year, and we're only into the third quarter that they can report. So we're going into a hard market. And a lot of the people that are in our industry right now do not know what a hard market looks like.
Right.
And our clients don't even understand what we're actually talking to them about when we say that. And so we need to make sure we're educating them that rates are going to be going up, that, you know, they need to look at their risks a little bit differently. They need to look at deductibles differently than they ever have before. And that really, you know, insurance is about risk transfer.
Yeah.
When I talk to an owner or a personal client, you know, it's all about like, hey, like, here's what I would advise. But at the end of the day, they're going to decide how they're going to transfer that risk. If they're going to transfer it to the carrier, they're going to transfer it to themselves.
Mm.
Totally up to them.
Yeah.
That story hasn't changed within the industry or what we do for our clients. But there is a lot more risk in other areas that they've never seen before, aka cyber.
Yeah.
Like the rates are going up a ton
right
now because of what's happening out there, you know, socially.
Yep.
And so we need to talk to them about it.
Yeah. The risk transfer, I think, is a great, it's a great point to make with anybody, you know, in that essence. I mean, you and I both buy insurance, and it's like, you know what, maybe I'll just hire my risk transfer to myself by hiring my deductible, therefore paying less out of pocket, you know, in the front of it, because I know that I'm not risky the way I run my business. Now, things do happen, and then when they do, I at least have coverage for that.
Yeah, or even on the personal lines side, I take the highest deductibles I can with my personal insurance, and I know that a claim for my house, if it's under that deductible, I consider it maintenance.
Yeah, yeah.
And no, I take care of it.
No, all good points that aren't, I think, talked about enough. Don't project your shit on me.
Yes.
Yes. So you wrote a book. This was a few years back. Do you have plans to write another book?
I do. I actually wrote a book, and this goes to being true to yourself. And it was all about creating your dream team. And it was printed. It was ready to go. Mm-hmm. I had final copies.
Wow.
And I decided that it didn't feel like me.
Okay.
And sometimes it's okay to just say, scrap it.
I want to write a book. That's so cool.
So you already wrote a book. So I scrapped it.
You scrapped it.
I scrapped that one. So then I realized the book that I really wanted to write is called Leadership Lies.
Okay.
And the Truths That Will Set You Free.
Yeah.
And it's all about, for like an example of one of the leadership lies that I outline, is that we say we have processes and procedures. And honestly, we don't.
Yeah.
We may have them, but they're outdated. We're not working on them consistently. And our team hasn't vetted those. Sometimes we just like go and Google something and then we're like, okay, that's the process and procedure, whether it be like HR
right.
or whether it be, you know, your, you know, sales team, and you hand it to them. And they're like, this is what we're doing. And it may be nothing like what they're actually doing. So process and procedures, like that's one of the leadership lies that I feel like we tell ourselves, that we do have that in place and that they're actually usable and they're actually current. And we don't.
Yeah. And if they're not used, if they're not followed, then everybody really just becomes their own boss. And, you know, you just kind of, I mean, that's how we operate here. On a whim. No, I mean, it's getting better. But yeah, it is tough if you don't have all that stuff established in the very beginning, because then you're just kind of backtracking to get, you know, organized and together. How about women in insurance sharing empowerment? Tell me how that started and what you plan on doing with that going forward.
It's basically, I created the women who want to lift each other up and are not men haters. Like, that's the club.
That's cool.
And a lot of men are involved in our organization. We call them benefactors. You're a benefactor in my life, and you've helped lift me up. You've supported my career, and I've been very fortunate to have a lot of benefactors in my life. And so we recognize benefactors, but we also recognize women in the industry, and we do a Wise Woman Award. And we spotlight them in social media.
Yeah.
And we tell their story. Because I think it's really important for women to see other women succeeding so that they feel inspired to take risks. Women aren't too awesome at that unless we have, like, everything completely designed and we have a backup plan for a backup plan. For
right.
a backup plan, and then maybe we'll take the risk.
That's so true. It's such a cool thing that you've done. And I know a lot of people, you know, just love that aspect of community that you've created there, you know, and the fact that you're not, you know, a man hater is, mm-hmm. is good too. I mean, I guess that's good for me.
It is.
Do you currently still work with your husband?
No, he came in, and sometimes it was funny. He recently just said that he could never work with me again.
Yeah, so it's tough, right? Yeah. Working with a spouse, and
that's why you need a work spouse.
That's why you need a work spouse, exactly. I don't, you know, and I think that entails being a positive thing. I think when people have their things that they're good at and they are prideful in, and they can come and, you know, share that after they've accomplished something with somebody else, as opposed to somebody else always being, you know, kind of always involved in it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not really sure what I'm trying to say here, but for me and, you know, Kim, it works.
Yeah.
Being separate in that area.
But think about it through the years. Like, you and I are like, okay, I'm driving home and I just need to offload this.
Yeah.
And if we go home and offload it to our spouse,
we're
not connecting with them the way that we need to. And they don't necessarily understand exactly why we feel the way we do, and they don't have the experiences we do,
or the perspectives, or talk to the same people, and that is kind of cool, because you talk to a whole pile of other people, have different experiences, all within the same realm of what we're trying to get answers for than I do, and to be able to share that, you know, with you or any of your members, you know, it's very helpful.
Yeah,
and
it just creates a better marriage. I find that he was a a dumping place sometimes all of the crap that I
come
was
home
dealing
or,
with. Exactly.
Yeah. No, that's really tough too. All right, cool. I got a couple of rapid fire questions. Are you ready to get it on?
Yes.
Okay, let's get it on. What is my let's get it on? No, that's kind of funny. All right. Reading or running?
Oh gosh, can I say both?
No.
Oh, I love both. Okay, right now it's reading.
Okay, what book are you reading right now?
I am reading, I just finished a book called Not Impossible, and it's it was an awesome book about a Mick, and he created Not Impossible Labs.
Yeah.
And he just created things that, because no one did, just to help people.
That's cool.
So that was an awesome book.
Yeah, because you are an avid reader.
I am.
Cook or go out to eat?
Cook.
Yeah, you like to cook.
I do.
Eggs or cereal?
Eggs.
Okay. Bigfoot or a Loch Ness Monster?
Loch Ness Monster. Yes.
Yeah. Elf or Christmas Story?
Elf.
Chicken or beef?
Chicken. Oh, wait. No, steak, beef. I'm going to go change.
Okay.
I just eat a lot more chicken than I do beef.
I know, right? Amazon or the mall?
Amazon. I hate giving Jeffy B that, but yes, Amazon.
The spa or 18 holes?
18 holes? Come on. Yeah. You knew that one.
Golf addiction is sickening. And you drink it black or do you eat cream and sugar?
Oh, I frou-frou it up.
Do you?
I do. Okay.
So funny.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. Well, I had a blast with you. I'm glad that we got to just chit-chat a little bit and do the podcast. You're a very special person to me and the agency and everything that you do for the insurance business. Where can people, you know, find you? And I know you do speaking and a lot of other stuff. And I know some people, you know, in and out of the insurance industry listen to this. So where can they find you?
Just my first and last name. So
DanielleSpeak.com. Very cool. She has her own website.
I do.
Well, I do too. I guess mine's like, I am the D-Lo.
I copied you.
Oh, very good. I like that. So thank you everybody for listening. Another episode of On the D-Lo. Appreciate it. Please, if you get a chance, you know, share the episode with your friends. We're building some great momentum right now, and there's some past episodes that you might find of interest as well of other business owners and people doing some really cool shit. So I appreciate you. Follow me on Instagram at I am the D-Lo, and the podcast is sponsored by myself, the D-Lo, and that's it. We will talk to you guys next time. See ya. Peace out.